Presentation will be given by Tricia Robinson from the Minnesota Department of Health. Tricia is the supervisor of the Waterborne Disease Unit at the Minnesota Department of Health.
Thank you. Good afternoon for the people still here. Good for you. So this is a study on a household well study that we did following illness with reportable enteric infections. A little bit of background, over 15 million U.S. households rely on private well water as their primary source of water. While public water supplies are routinely monitored, once construction is complete, the owner of a private well is typically responsible for maintaining the well and monitoring well quality, condition, and performance. A decrease in the number of reported outbreaks in public water systems has been seen in the past 40 years. However, the annual proportion of drinking water outbreaks associated with individual water systems increased during 1971 to 2006. Groundwater consumption is a known risk factor for a number of different infections, a number of different enteric pathogens. So karst is a terrain with distinctive landforms and hydrology created primarily from the dissolution of soluble rocks. It is characterized by sinkholes, caves, and springs that allow for a direct, rapid exchange between surface water and groundwater. Karst aquifers are highly productive, but incredibly vulnerable to contamination. So much of southeastern Minnesota, and if you guys aren't familiar with Minnesota, we're sort of right in the middle at the top of the U.S., but many residents there rely on private wells for their drinking water. Unfortunately, it's also comprised of karst aquifers, as is indicated by the red on the map. The region also has high cattle density, potentially acting as a source of groundwater contamination. So the objectives of our study, we examined the association between private well water contamination and enteric illness. Additionally, factors associated with private well water bacterial contamination were assessed. So we conducted a case control study during May through October in 9 counties in southeastern Minnesota. We actually used this catchment area not only because of the karst and the cattle density, but also a previous nitrate monitoring study had been done in that same area of the state. So for our purposes, a case was defined as a patient with a laboratory-confirmed Campylobacter, Cryptosporidium, or sugatoxin-producing E. coli, both 0157 and non-0157 infections, who reported consuming well water at home during their exposure period. The exposure period was defined as 7 days prior to illness onset for Campylobacter and STEC cases and 14 days prior to illness onset for Cryptosporidium cases. All of these cases were identified through our state health department, as all of these pathogens are mandatory reportable, and so every person who has one of these conditions, it's voluntary, but over 90% of them choose to complete a standard interview and take their time chatting with us. So individuals were excluded from the study if the pathogen could not be confirmed at our state public health laboratory, which we often see, especially with Cryptosporidium cases, with the use of rapid tests. If they were part of a recognized outbreak, they had traveled internationally during their exposure period, they could not be reached after 10 telephone attempts, or they did not speak English or Spanish. So up to 3 control households were recruited for each case using phone lists generated using a reverse directory of addresses in the vicinity of the case's home. We originally intended to do it as neighborhood controls. However, southeastern Minnesota, your neighbor might be 5 miles away from you. So we had to make some changes to that. Households were excluded if a member of the household had experienced diarrheal illness at all since May 1st. So households were enrolled via telephone. An initial phone interview collected detailed information about the well using a standard questionnaire. Additionally, we collected information on well depth, well diameter, and year of construction. We also collected information on water treatment, water testing history, and any recent water problems they may have had. And we also scheduled a site visit at this time. It's important to note, though, that this information that we collected initially on the phone interview, that was according to the well owner. And if you can imagine, as previous talked about, you're leaving a lot of open space when you're asking people what information about it, as we found. So during our site visit, a water sample was collected from the kitchen faucet, and if accessible, from the source tap as well. If two kitchen faucets were present, as depicted here, and typically that means that one of the faucets, the faucet on the right, is actually a treated faucet, then we collected samples from both. Our samples were tested for total coliforms and E. coli using the Coal Alert test, and we also recorded the GPS location of the well and performed an evaluation of potential contaminants surrounding the well. So the evaluation of potential contaminants noted evidence of the following within 500 feet of the wellhead: animal feedlots, animal or poultry buildings, manure storage areas, land application of manure, feeding or watering area, drain fields, privies, septic tanks, or other wells, including dry wells. Participants were notified via phone within 1 day of sample results. Educational information, including contact information for the MDH well management section and a water system disinfection fact sheet, was given to households whose water systems tested positive. Any sample that was positive for total coliforms or E. coli was retested at 7 days and 30 days post-initial sample collection. A letter with all of the results was mailed to participants at the conclusion of the study. So analysis was performed using SAS with statistical significance accepted at a P of less than 0.05. Frequency matching was used to guarantee the geographic distribution of cases and controls was similar. However, no individual matching was performed during the risk factor analyses. Minimum isolation distances were based on criteria that are described in the Minnesota rules. So a total of 31 eligible cases were identified during the study period. 24, or 77%, agreed to participate. Of 116 control households contacted, 68, or 59%, agreed to participate. Overall, 28 household kitchen faucets tested positive for total coliforms, including 8 cases and 20 controls. As no difference was observed between case and control households, further results will focus on factors associated with well water bacterial contamination. So this table shows some selected potential contaminants that were located within 50 feet. We did, as I noted in the methods, collect potential contaminants within 500 feet. However, based on Minnesota rules, this is why we're using the 50 feet here. Presence of a septic tank or an animal or poultry building within 50 feet of the well were independently associated with having a coliform-positive kitchen faucet. Being unable to locate a well log, either through the property owner or through the Minnesota Well Index, was associated with a coliform-positive kitchen faucet. Additionally, households that reported noticing cloudy water were significantly more likely to have a coliform-positive kitchen faucet. Of households with a positive kitchen faucet had a negative source sample. Of these households, 87% had a water softener, and 33% had on-site water treatment device such as reverse osmosis or a carbon filter. Numerous water softeners were noted to be empty and poorly maintained. Additionally, the water treatment devices, nobody could really tell us when they had last been serviced. So private wells in southeastern Minnesota were frequently contaminated with coliform bacteria, regardless of whether someone in the household had recently been ill with an enteric illness. More than half of the households with a positive kitchen faucet had a negative source sample, indicative of a premise plumbing issue. Being unable to locate a well log for over 40% of households limited well characteristic analyses. However, the positive association between missing well logs and a positive kitchen faucet likely indicates an association with older wells. Private well owners should observe minimum isolation distances from contamination sources to help maintain water quality. Owners should test private wells annually for coliform bacteria, old wells, or wells less than 50 feet deep should be tested more frequently. Additionally, homeowners should maintain water softeners and other treatment devices according to manufacturer's directions. So I'd just like to acknowledge the many people that helped make this happen, including especially those that went out in the field every day to collect our data, as well as CDC's Environmental Health Specialist Network water program that provided the funding for this. With that, I take any questions, and if you notice, the bottom middle picture is my personal favorite from this study. This was on our third follow-up visit to the household, and the family had had a child who had tested positive for cryptosporidium multiple times, but they didn't seem to see the need to clean up the well house.
Hi.
Hi.
Twyla Singh from the North Dakota Department of Health. Hi, neighbor. I was wondering about the Minnesota rules. Those rules are set by the Environmental Health Department in terms of, like, how far these contaminated things need to be from the well. Is that correct?
Correct. So our health department is we have kind of our EPI division, which I'm in, and then we have our Environmental Health division, which contains a well management section as well as all of our drinking water regulators for both community and non-community wells. And so they work to get those, and then they're published in state statute, state rules.
Okay. Did you measure adherence to that?
Yes. So poor adherence in many cases, yes. And that's why, you know, if they had it within the 50 feet, that was less than what they were supposed to have it. But, you know, it's not to say that the well wasn't – or that the – well wasn't properly constructed at the time or put away from it, but, you know, once that well is constructed, there is no regulatory oversight. And so when you come in and put your septic tank or you do something else, nobody knows but you.
Hi, it's David from the Alaska Cancer Registry again. So I'm really surprised that you had so many wells that actually had positive tests from the kitchen faucet. I mean, don't these people, like, get sick from drinking water like that? Because I know that in my well system that, I mean, I have to test every 3 months, and if there's a positive test, then there's a whole protocol that I have to go through to make sure that that wasn't, like, a mistake, and then I have to keep on, you know, I have to do repeated tests, and hopefully I get a negative test after a while. But fortunately, I've never had a positive test.
Yeah, so our original intent was to try to find that link between people who had been sick with one of the pathogens that you'd think could come from well water and a positive thing. We didn't find that. And so, you know, do we think people are getting sick from well water? Yes. And our case control studies and other things have shown that in the past. Fortunately, we weren't able to show that with this. But again, as far as the sampling, that's on the homeowner. While the recommendation is annually, you know, the vast majority of people, I have a private well, I will admit that I probably don't adhere to those guidelines as well as I should. But, you know, so you know, when we asked them when the last time they had their well tested, or, you know, most of them said never, or when it was sold, or I inherited this property from, you know, grandma and grandpa, and, you know, so then they didn't test. We do have a requirement that they test at change of property, but most people, they don't, the water comes out, it looks clean, it's good to go.
So I've seen some research that looks at private well use and some of the diarrheal illnesses, and what they found is that people that live longer at their residences actually kind of have an immunity to the coliform. And so they saw association with age and also immune compromised people. So there was a risk there. So maybe that's why. I don't know if you looked at the demographic information in your data.
Yeah, we certainly did. And we did find of the people who had been ill and had tested positive, we found a greater association with Campylobacter cases versus Cryptosporidium or Shigatoxin-producing E. coli. But are the ages and demographics of our cases in that area, they weren't any different from the rest of our cases in that area or throughout the state.
Okay. I was curious, too, did you incorporate how long they were at their residence?
So we looked at point of sale and information of that. We had really poor information. You would think that people would know when they purchased their home or got it, but they don't.
And I was also wondering, are you incorporating drinking water source questions into your investigations as far as infectious diseases that you look at,
yeah,
and which ones?
Yeah, so all three that I talked about here, we ask everybody about any of their drinking water sources, particularly private well, both at home or away that they would have had. But then also we incorporate it into our salmonella, giardia. We actually even ask them our shigella cases. So basically all of our enteric interviews do include a question about their water consumption.
Thank you.
Thank you.